Okay. So I want to jump back up here just to remind everybody. We're in Genesis 29. We're picking it up. Did it go out again? Thank you. We're in Genesis 29. We're going to pick it up in verse 15. This is between chapters 29 all the way through 31. We've got Jacob as he's outside of the land. So he's in chapter 28. He's sent out. He goes out of the land, and God promises to protect him, to preserve him. And so now chapters 29 through 31, there are a unit together, and it's basically bracketed around his arrival to Haran, and then it ends with his departure from Haran. And then in the middle, you have these contrasting outwitting episodes. So Laban outwits Jacob, and then Jacob outwits Laban. And then in the middle is the birth of the sons. So that's where we are. And chapter 29. And what we're going to be looking at tonight is verses 15 to 30. And this is where Jacob works for Rachel, serves Laban for 7 years. And then in verses 21 to 30, that's when really you have Jacob being outwitted, or at least that comes to light. So there's customary marriage going on, and that goes on, that happens at Jacob's expense. So, but since these go together, at least these first two, I want to go ahead and read all of chapter 29, or at least through verse 30. I can't remember, does chapter 29 end with verse 30? No, it doesn't. So I'll read all of chapter 29. Focus will be on verses 15 to 30. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. As he looked, he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. For out of that well the flocks were watered. The stone on the well's mouth was large, and when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where do you come from?" They said, "We are from Haran." He said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" They said, "We know him." He said to them, "Is it well with him?" They said, "It is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." He said, "Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and pasture them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep." While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Jacob told Laban all these things, and Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your daughter Rachel." Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to any other man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening, he took his daughter, Leah, and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Did I not serve with you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me?" Laban said, "It is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me for another 7 years." So Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his female servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel to be her servant. So Jacob went into Rachel also. And he loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. Before I open it up, one of the things to remember here is that the two episodes, the one at the beginning of chapter 29 that goes through really through verse 8, but through verse 14, you have the custom of here's what the shepherds do. We wait, and we all water together. And Jacob's like, "No, that's not the way to do it." And so he's going in there being self-assertive. He's not caring about local custom or anything like that. And it kind of works out there. Another thing to see is that so Jacob is totally on his own. So he's utterly dependent on Laban, and his that is. So when Jacob meets Laban and Laban welcomes him in a way and shows him hospitality in a way that the shepherds don't, this looks like a good thing. But that also reminds us of Laban's history with Abraham's servant when he came in chapter 24 and all of this, all of these goods, all of this wealth came to the family and that he partook in and so he may have an expectation, but at least he remembers how it was. And then when he ends the "surely you are my bone and my flesh," that could be taken as a really good thing. "Yes, you are my kin." But it could also be not so good. It can just be taken as a, "Well, I guess you've convinced me," maybe a little disappointed or whatever, but there's a, it's the way that it's said is not necessarily like this is a warm thing. So, that's kind of a recap of where we've been. What did you observe in the reading and what do you have to say about that or ask about it?
I've never thought of it that way. I've always thought when he said, "Your bone and my bone, plus my flesh." Of course, you can't. We find out we can't trust Laban. You know, he's as well as the rest of the family.
Yeah,
they're all kind of the same way. So who knows? But I always thought he was thrilled to have kinsmen there and part of the family. So that particular thing that's interesting that you say that. I just personally had never. He was really excited.
It's usually translated in a positive way. But the way that this word here, the "surely," it does not, the word itself is not inherently a positive word. It can go, there are uses of it where it's ambiguous. So it can be positive and it also can be negative. It's just how the things end up working out.
I guess the verse right before it always, he ran immediately, he embraced him. and he heard of it, he ran. So
yeah.
I mean, but was it customary for them, for your relatives to serve you like that?
What do you mean, serve?
Like, oh. Because to me, that almost is like a slave fashion.
Well, so for the month that, you mean when, like when he says, like, should you serve me for nothing? That's in part why he's bringing it up, is like, this is not a slave master relationship. And you're not a freeloader and all of that. So, you could actually make a case of like, Jacob shouldn't have to do anything.
Yeah, that's why I was asking if it was like, because, you know, if he's relative, you'd think it'd bring him into his home. And
yeah. So it does assume that over the course of this month, Jacob has taken on some kind of work responsibility. But we don't know the circumstances of it, like how did that start, who instigated it. But we do know that there were no terms. There was no contract or like, here's what your wages are going to be. You know, he's just pulling his weight or whatever. So Laban is, in saying, here's name your wages. I mean, that's a good thing. Like, Jacob's not going to be working for nothing. So. What else?
Verse 7, it says, fulfill the week of this month. Is that a week?
Verse what?
27.
Oh, yeah. Fulfill the week, complete the week. That's an actual week. Yeah. Yeah, and it has to do with marriage ceremony practices. The celebration of a marriage would last a week.
So he didn't work 7 years, get Leah, work another 7 years, and then get Rachel.
No, yeah, he got him in the middle. He worked for 7 years in order to get to the point where he could marry her. And then he ends up marrying her, and the deal is you work for another 7 years. Yeah. And that's important because the next 7 years are going to be full of children. Conception.
Makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
How common was polygamy in that?
So marriage was definitely, so you have family. Two families coming together and you know, depending on the role of the family within in the geopolitical realm, that could be, there's an alliance going on between those families or between those nations. There could be that, but typically a marriage was the mother and father are basically entrusting the daughter to their daughter to this man and within this family. And so it really is you're carrying on the family line on both sides through children, but then you're also the new wife is being taken care of. If you're in a well-off family, then you could take care of more than one wife. And so it depended on means. And here it just, Jacob kind of, he doesn't intend to marry two. He only intends to marry one. And so he gets tricked into doing it. It wouldn't have been out of the ordinary. But obviously later on God, he makes provision for it in the law, which is interesting, and offers protections for all the wives, and even those who would be second class wives like Bilhah and Zipporah. I think the polygamy thing is really it's not forbidden because I don't know. It's hard to say why God didn't forbid it just outright. It's impossible to say, actually. But some ideas that I have are because of the not because of cultural custom, but because of family need. So provision, protection, and then you also have, you know, mothers dying in labor, and so, you know, you have remarriage going on a lot, and so there's that. So there's the need to provide, and then the need for the line to carry on. And so it's kind of similar to like when Jesus is asked the question, what about divorce? And why did Moses write about divorce and allow divorce? And Jesus says, well, it's because of your hardness of heart. Like, don't think like this is a good thing because it's part of the law. Because from the beginning, God created male and female, joined them together. The two shall become one flesh. And that key, that two shall become one flesh, I think what are the grounds for saying and believing that polygamy is wrong? It would go back to Genesis 2, just like divorce. So it's a little bit more than what you asked, but yeah.
No, but it's kind of interesting because then the 12 tribes come out of this, and then you think of other, but it's not without conflict and problems, and mm-hmm. King David's family and right. his wives and
right.
the conflict going on between yeah. the sons. And
yeah.
It just seems like it kind of follows you. I mean, when you're not yeah. the perfect, I mean, God allowed them to happen, mm-hmm. and he even uses it, but mm-hmm. in a perfect scenario, yeah. there always seems to be some
right.
issues that
come right. out, yeah.
simple issues yeah. that come out.
It's interesting that of the kings that we know about as far as their marriages go, the only one that we know, maybe I don't know enough, but it's interesting to me that of the big three, Saul, David, Solomon, only Saul has one.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me. And obviously David and Solomon have problems associated with their lives and with their reigns because they disobey Deuteronomy 17. So, what else? Okay, well let's get into it. So what we have here is we have a, I'll just call it an ABAB. So AB and then another one, AB, A prime, B prime. So you have a betrothal and then a 7 years. And then you have the wedding, and then you have another 7 years. So verses 15 through 30 really kind of basically work out that way. 15 through 19 is this betrothal, then he works for 7 years, and then you have the wedding, which is another extended time for 10 verses basically. And then the last part of verse 30 is another 7 years. So verse 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" So Laura asked about this earlier. Is this normal? What's going on here? And it's hard to tell. Like, Laban is not trustworthy at all, and with everything that he says, that comes out more and more. And so, is he doing a good thing for Jacob or not? Or is he taking advantage? And I think based on his character, regardless of what the cultural custom was, he's taking advantage of the situation for his own benefit. So that kind of probably goes against what I said earlier, but as far as Laban is concerned, I think we can safely assume like he's not doing Jacob a favor necessarily on the face of it. But this this word wages is going to come up throughout chapters 29 to 31. So the wives become wages, the sheep, the flocks become wages, and there's a dispute about the wages. The wives actually bring up the wages later on. So this becomes a central term. And really, so it's just setting up the exploitation. So tell me what your wages shall be. And serve is going to be a key word too throughout chapters 29 to 31. So now Laban had two daughters. So verse 16 tells us something more than what we've already known. So before this, what have we known about Laban's family? We've only known about one, right? Rachel. And we also have not been told. I mean, we jump it forward like, hey, and Jacob kisses her, like, you know, it's love at first sight. It's like, well, not necessarily, because Jacob's all just he's really concerned about Laban, right? And Moses actually reflects that with like his mother's brother and the flock of his mother's brother and what he tells Rachel. I'm your kinsman. I'm Aunt Rebecca's son. You know, that kind of thing. So he's really concerned about that. So this is the first time that we've seen Jacob in relationship to the two daughters. This is also the first time that we've seen that he has two daughters. So now we have the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. So older is Leah, younger is Rachel. Where have we heard of this kind of thing? Sibling set, older, younger. Jacob and Esau. So some of that is coming up and into this is that, so in what Jacob deceived Isaac about, younger, older son stuff, it's going to get turned on him. So Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. So what is this Leah's eyes being weak? I have weak eyes. My prescription is terrible or high or whatever. So does that mean I have weak eyes like Leah does?
I would say she wasn't as attractive.
And why would you say that?
Just because he like goes overboard with how beautiful Rachel is.
Good, yeah. And that's Moses saying it, right? Mm-hmm. So beautiful in form and appearance. So Rachel is definitely outshining Leah. Now, what have you heard about the eyes? Why focus on Leah's eyes?
Lust of the eyes?
Huh?
Like lust of the eyes?
Oh, yeah, so Jacob doesn't really lust after her, maybe. I like what you're thinking, but I don't think that's
right. There's a window
to
your soul.
Window to your soul, okay. Yeah. Anybody have any? It's always the one working, you know. It's like she's Martha before Martha.
That's a good point.
Think about what happens later on, and why Jacob doesn't know who he's marrying. Maybe that's not enough. Yeah, it's dark. Yeah, and well, he stood there with her, you know. Why would he not recognize her?
Yeah,
he probably had much wrong.
Totally veiled, right? So yeah, there may be like what you see, are you're just seeing her eyes. So there may be a kind of a veil involved. However, on the other side of that, Rachel is beautiful in form and appearance. So. Is that just her eyes? It's not talking about her eyes. But there's something about the eyes that would be a point of attraction. So Laura, what you said earlier is right. Like she was unattractive. How would you? What are the subjective categories for attractiveness? Ancient Near Eastern culture, one of them would be the eyes. And what makes eyes weak and what makes eyes the opposite of weak, I don't know, right? So different cultures have different different perspectives on attraction and things like that. But is when we get into Rachel and her, she's beautiful in form and appearance. She, as far as attraction goes, she outshines her sister. Now, something to keep in mind with the Bible is that this, as far as character goes, being beautiful in form and appearance is not necessarily a good thing. Because it actually show it, it's a way that the Bible talks about, and this happens throughout the Bible, it's a way for the Bible to say something without saying much about a person's character. And so, like, Absalom's an easy one, right? He is known for his beautiful hair, right? And that's actually what ends up killing him or leading to his death. And but he's, you know, he is the best looking guy and all of that stuff. Saul as well, right? He's big, he's strong, he's a head above everybody else, which is what you want from your champion. And so there's a physical description that actually says he's not what he appears to be. And that's why he contrasts well, and he serves as a good foil for David, who is a man after God's own heart. I take that to mean that he's a man that God has chosen, not necessarily reflecting David's relationship with God first and foremost. I think that comes from it, but I think it, you know, this is who God has chosen. And that's actually what God tells Samuel at the anointing of David. It's like, God looks on the heart. Man looks at the outward appearance. God looks on the heart. However, David is also described as
a man after God's own heart.
Well, no, I mean, no, his appearance. Yes, he is. But his appearance. Do you remember how he's described in his appearance?
Ruddy
and handsome, which is like,
I don't know what that means.
Is that a, well, yeah, first of all, what does that mean? I mean, it's got to mean something like, you know, he wasn't bad to look at. But in the Bible, it's like, uh-oh, what is that? So it kind of plants a seed for, it's not going to be all roses for David. Somebody else who looks good?
Joseph.
Is Joseph. And Joseph works well, his appearance works well for Israel. His appearance actually is hidden from his brothers because he's clean shaven and all that stuff. But the way that he exploits the situation for Pharaoh's benefit, not so good for the people of Egypt and everything like that. So, and then you get to like Isaiah 53, the suffering servant. Is he anything to look at? No, he's not. And then you get to the New Testament with Jesus, and do you have any physical description of him?
No.
No. We have no, we don't know how tall he was. We don't know anything about what he looked like. We don't know anything about his appearance, which forces us to look at his character, to evaluate his heart on display in his life. So the Bible uses attractiveness as a way to talk about character. And failures of character.
Very beautiful outside, but she was a thief.
Yes.
She stole from her father.
Yes, she stole from her father. So, thank you. That's getting back to Rachel and all that stuff. Right, and she gets mad at Jacob about the children and all that stuff.
Her form and her face were beautiful.
Leah
was
great either.
Yeah. But inside.
Yeah. But the thing about Leah is that she does compete.
Yeah.
But God's favor is on her. Like the fact that she has all these children is God's favor is on her, and she responds to that, right? Judah, and so there's a and she depends upon God for her vindication with Dan.
So can weak be translated soft?
Yeah, yeah.
So when you say soft eyes, that makes me think gentle or kind or.
Yeah, and that's why the translations go with weak, because they don't want you to think from Jacob's perspective this is a good thing. Yeah. So Moses is saying this is in part why Jacob loves Rachel is and not Leah is because of how Leah looks. Which says something about Jacob.
Does the Hebrew give you any more insight into that?
No, it's just It doesn't. It's just a... This word is not necessarily... Yeah, it's not... It doesn't say something good. It's... From the perspective of others, it would be a flaw. So, okay, so now we know that two daughters, there's an older and a younger, and Leah's unattractive while Rachel is very attractive, and then we find out that Jacob loved Rachel. So Jacob has his preferences, and all of that sets up for what Jacob says. Here are my wages. I will serve you for 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. So he identifies the one that he's serving for. And then Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to any other man. Stay with me. So I brought this up last time because it's in red and all that. Does anybody remember what I brought up last time with this her?
It's not specified.
It's not specified. Laban is a trickster. He is slippery. And so it's like, yeah, her. You know, it's like not so. And what's behind this is that, no, we have a cultural custom that the older marries first. And so he's seen. Right. He doesn't bring it out until after the fact. So he's deceptive. He knows that he can exploit Jacob. And so he does it. Right. And Jacob's just not, he's just completely trusting Laban, right? Because Rebecca sent Jacob to him, right? To get a wife. And like, hey, it's working out, just like mom said. Okay, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed to him but a few days because of the love that he had for her. So this brings in a couple of things. It's the love for Rachel that, and so Jacob's just like, 7 years have flown by because of this. What about this few days, just in the context of the whole Jacob account, whole Jacob story? So we got to get out of chapter 29 and go back to, I think, chapter 27 or 28. Somebody else says something about a few days. Says it to Jacob.
Well, his brother was going to kill him. After a few days, he was. Did his mother tell him that it was between Jacob and Esau?
It, not about that. That the. But you're on the right track. So Genesis 27, what was it, 44? Rebecca tells Jacob it's only going to be a few days. Like, what you did to Esau, it's just going to blow over because Esau's fickle and all of that, right? And so it's just going to be a few days. Well, 7 years seems like a few days to Jacob, and it seems like it's working out in his favor. And so that's kind of bringing that in. What Rebecca told Jacob was just going to be a few days. So it's just a little while, in contrast to years. It doesn't turn out that way. It doesn't turn out the way that Rebecca said. It actually, here, we're on 7 years now. So Jacob's time outside of the land is getting longer. Okay. Is that... You got to look on your face.
Well, I'm on to another thought, though.
Oh, okay. You're done with that, huh?
Well, if Rachel was betrothed to him in that 7 years, what would that have done for Leah? She wouldn't have lived as an engaged woman.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. So, it doesn't necessarily change anything for either one of them. Perhaps like the full on betrothal practices of like, you know, you live in a different way. A woman lives in a different way than what she did when she was not betrothed. And then even then you live in a different way or present yourself in a different way when you're married. I don't think that's really in play here. The Laban has been so general that maybe in the next 7 years, somebody will come along and marry Leah and they won't have to worry about it. But he's so general that he has allowed himself the wiggle room to say, well, this is our custom, right? So perhaps at the end of the 7 years, he can say, okay, here's Rachel because Leah's married off. And that wouldn't, that definitely wouldn't work out the way that he wants. But, something to know, I want to read something to you, like what Jacob is offering to Laban in offering him his work, his labor for 7 years for a marriage. I just want to read to you about the marriage or the betrothal practice and a marriage present or a bride price. So you're paying a bride price, and it's basically a capital transfer by the groom's family to the bride's family in this pledge for marriage. And later on in Deuteronomy 22, the bride price, this betrothal price is maxed out at 50 shekels. And it doesn't matter how much 50 shekels, I'll tell you in a minute, but the gifts were typically lower than that. So Jacob is in a position, he does not have family around to where he can pay that. And so he can only offer service, the 7 year service instead. Now a laborer, a general laborer in those days would have made over the course of a month was a shekel. What is it? Between one half and one shekel a month. So if the max according to the law later on is 50 shekels, and you give 7 years, how many months is 7 years? That's 84. Thank you. 84 months, and so that if it's a shekel a month, let's just say a shekel a month, then that's 84 shekels, right? And so Jacob is in offering his own labor for 7 years. That's quite the betrothal price, right? So he's given him a lot. So now he works the 7 years, and you see that the 7 years end up being just as fast written down as they seem to be for Jacob, right? We're in and out in one sentence. So now we come to the customary marriage at Jacob's expense in verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." So he is ready to get married. This 7 years has been is done and over with, and he's ready to be married. And remember, it's because of his love for her. So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. So this is a marriage feast, right? The marriage ceremony and the feast that would come along with it. All the people of the place. Where have we seen all or other people outside of Laban's family in this place? Where have we seen that in this chapter?
At the well,
the shepherds, right? And the shepherds talk about, we have this custom about watering sheep. This is how we watering the flocks. This is how we go about it, right? So the people of the place will know what the custom is for marriage, right? And who gets married first, that kind of thing. So gathering together for a feast. So this would be 7 days for the feast, to give you some background on that. Normally a wedding involved processions to and from the bride's house, a reading of the marriage contract, and a large meal attended by both families and neighbors. The first day's celebration ended with the groom wrapping his cloak around the bride, who was veiled throughout the ceremony. Remember that? Veiled throughout the ceremony. And taking her to the nuptial chamber where the marriage was consummated. However, the feasting and the celebration continued for a whole week. So the marriage itself, the ceremony happens on the first day. The bride is completely veiled. Consummation happens the first night, and then you have a whole week of celebrations. But remember that it's the two families coming together too. So Jacob doesn't have that, right? So there are certain things about the marriage ceremony that could not be observed. For example, do we have the right woman? Right? Mom, Rebecca, go in, make sure that's Rachel, right? And Rebecca might know, like, I need to go in and make sure that this is Rachel because I know the custom, I know the practice. So Jacob, he's totally on his own. So he's totally able to be exploited. So he's vulnerable to what Laban is going to do. So they're at the beginning of the week, and so this is after the marriage ceremony. So it says, in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. I think that's really summarizing everything. Leah's been veiled the entire time. So it's not like a bait and switch necessarily where Rachel was there at the ceremony and now Leah is. I think Leah was there the whole time. And because that would, to do something else would actually make it illegitimate. And Laban needs this to be legitimate.
Spoke the whole time?
Not necessarily. Because, I mean, the only thing that we know that happened in it was, it wasn't the exchange of vows or anything. It's this symbolic practice of, like, Ruth saying to Boaz, put me under the shelter of your wings. Like, provide for me, protect me. And that action is that, right? It symbolizes that. And you can do it without the words. And there wouldn't be a whole lot of interaction between Jacob and either one of the ladies for those 7 years. I mean, you would have pretty separate quarters, separate, you know, all of that stuff. So it's not like Jacob would have, there's a particular smell or anything like that.
They wouldn't have like been having meals together.
Yeah, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Although, I mean, even if he did, like, she's veiled. And so he just has no idea.
And how would he know that Rachel was, was it just her eyes? That Rachel was beautiful?
He's talking about the wedding feast.
Well,
yeah, at the wedding. At the wedding, yeah. Completely veiled and all of that. And by that time, Jacob, he's feasting, celebrating. He definitely, by the time the night comes and consummation happens, he has no idea what's going on. And it's dark, yeah, and everything like that. So in the evening, Laban took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her, so the marriage is now consummated. And then this is important. Verse 24 is important for us to know for later on. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. So this is part of the father providing a dowry for her daughter, for the bride, and that provides security. So Zilpah would provide security in the case of Leah becoming a widow or divorce happens, and so this would have, it's not just, we're only told about a dowry when it's important. So an example of one dowry that is important that we're told about that's money is a parable, but the widow with 10 coins, right? Like that's everything that she has to live on. And so if she loses 10% of what she has to live on, that's a big deal, right? And so Luke 15, come and rejoice with me for I've found what I've lost. But we're not told about it often. When we are, that means it's going to be important for later on. And so Zilpah, there might have been clothing and furniture and money involved in this too. But actually giving a servant to Leah, that's actually really generous. It's really generous. And so we see over time how the Laban is providing for his daughters. I mean, at the exploitation of Jacob, but he's providing for his daughters and he's being generous toward them. And that actually, when you get to the end in chapter 31 and they start to leave, like the daughters have turned on Laban because of he's actually mistreated them as well. What they claim he's done with their bride price. So, and what he, really what he owes them. So, this starts out pretty good. But the, so Zilpah, she becomes, what happens with her? What ends up happening with her and Jacob?
Like, she bears some of his children.
Yeah, yeah. Leah gives Zilpah to Jacob for a wife, and that's in part to compete with Rachel, who has already given Bilhah to Jacob. This happens in chapter 29 and 30. And so what Zilpah is being set up for eventually, and then Bilhah later, is so they're slave girls, and they're going to become second-class wives. So this explains why Jacob orders his family in the way that he does when he approaches Esau. He puts these slave wives in front with their children, right? So if Esau is in fact crazy and is going to slaughter everybody, well, then the ones we don't care about so much are, you know, like, it's, Jacob's just like, man, no wonder he has his sons are all, yeah, because it's like, you know, we joke at home about Penny being my favorite daughter, and it is just a joke, Jude.
You sure about that?
Yes, I am sure, because if it had to be where I was, if Uncle Luke was really mad at me for whatever reason, I would not put you and Adeline in front to face his wrath. I would step up and I would face the wrath of my brother, and not put my family in that situation. Jacob, on the other hand, he's like back in the back with Rachel and Joseph. Anyway, so I mean, it's just not a good family choice if you want to have unity and joy in your family. It's like, don't actually make it obvious. Like, let people wonder, right? So that's way in the future. But Bilhah and Zilpah, the children they do conceive are considered to be part of Rachel and Leah's children, and obviously Jacob's children. And so this is, remember, with Sarah giving Hagar to Abraham, part of the deal is whatever child comes of this will be my child, Sarah says. And obviously she rejects him later on. So this really is, they've become surrogates. This is a form of surrogacy. Okay, so he has, he's consummated the marriage with who he thinks is Rachel, and he wakes up in the morning, verse 25, and in the morning, behold, it was Leah. Like, to read this in Hebrew is a lot of fun, because it's like, it just comes out of, no, like, you know it's coming, and then it's just there. Behold, it's Leah, but it's spoken of, it's written from Jacob's perspective. Like, he's waking up, you know, all googly-eyed and all that stuff, and then he's like, oh, that's not her. Oh, no, you know. And so that's what he says. What is this you have done to me? What is this you have done to me? That's his response to Laban. There are other times where this has come up, and it's never really a good thing. What is this you have done? So Genesis 3:13, God says this to Eve. Genesis 12:18, Pharaoh says this to Abraham, right? She's my sister. And then Abimelech says this to Isaac in Genesis 26, verse 10. And so he continues, did I not serve you for Rachel? Like, I was specific. Why then have you deceived me? And that this word for deception, a form of that word was used back in Genesis 27:35. And remember what happens in chapter 27?
Isaac blessed Jacob.
Right. And the context of that blessing was Jacob deceiving Isaac, right? And so what Jacob did has been turned on him. Like, the deceiver has been deceived. Laban has Jacob's number. He's met his match as far as deception goes. And that also suggests that Jacob, in experiencing it, is, in a backhanded way, condemning his own behavior toward his father. So he, again, that's it's implied there, but like if you sat him down like, Jacob, you did the same thing, right? It probably wouldn't be until that moment he's like, oh no. But it's come back around to him. Now you get to verse 26. Laban said, it is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. So custom. His Laban's excuse on day two of the marriage week is, well, this is our cultural custom. This is what we do. And then it's also there. You could read some things into here, like you'd have to know how much Jacob told Laban about this, but there is a link between what has just happened with Leah and Jacob, the deception there, and then what Jacob did back in chapter 27. There is a link because Jacob's just what's gone around has come around for him. You can kind of see like this is, it's not so done in our country, like from where you come from, maybe that's how you guys work, but that's not how we work here. All that depends on how much Laban knows about the situation with Jacob and with his deception of his father and supplanting Esau, the firstborn. Now, I'll ask you, is this a good excuse or not? Is this a good reason? Yeah. It's like you wait, like you could have clarified this, like it has to happen. And so it's his silence over the course of 7 years. And from the start of that initial conversation, it's his maliciousness is exposed. His deception, the depth of his deception, his character is totally exposed. And so what does Laban do when he's exposed? Like, well, it's just our custom, you know? So he doesn't think twice about this. So what that would mean, just as far as like the whole Bible talking about the human heart, like he does this all the time. Like, what's the big deal? And so he's not sorry. He's not repentant or anything like that. This is how he lives, right? So that's setting Laban up to be outwitted by Jacob here in a couple chapters. And God's going to bless Jacob at Laban's expense. But Laban just completely blows this off. Okay, so yeah, I deceived you. Here's a solution. Complete the week of this one, so Leah, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me for another 7 years. So now the other is Rachel. And here's the cost. Here's your wage. Here's what it's going to cost you is another 7 years of service. So a few days has turned into 7 years that didn't seem like 7 years, and now it has turned into 14 years.
What's the we will give you?
We representative of the family. Yeah, I don't think there's too much there. We just meaning him, but a representative of the family. Yeah, he's not being. I don't think he's doing anything other than that. Like we will. Yeah, I don't think he's doing that. I think that's more how we would take it than how he's saying it. And so Jacob did so and completed her week. What's missing here in comparison to the first 7 years?
He married her and then did the 7 years.
Right, yeah. So
before,
yeah. Completes the week. He goes through another marriage ceremony with Rachel, completes that week. So lots of feasting. Jacob's not entirely excited. But what's missing from the first part? What's missing from the first reference to the 7 years? What? No, no. The feast happens. There's another marriage ceremony.
It doesn't seem like it's a few days.
Doesn't seem like it's a few days. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's catching up to him. Yeah. So he's, I mean, he's got the girl, but then he's got an unexpected girl too, right? And so he completed, this is Leah's week, by the way, sorry. So completed his week, and then Laban gave his daughter Rachel to be his wife. And so now he has two wives, and then Bilhah comes up. Laban does the same thing for Rachel as he did for Leah. Pretty generous. And the thing with Jacob is, like, this Jacob did so. He has no choice. In here, he has no choice because he wants Rachel. And so his desire for Rachel, his love for Rachel, leads him into this second marriage. So technically, he doesn't have to do this. But he wants Rachel. So you see how he is driven by what he wants. And that needs to be refined. That needs to be sanctified. That's something that needs to be worked on, and it'll be worked on throughout his time. But the reason why he has two wives, yes, is because he was deceived, but also because of what he wants. And so Jacob went into Rachel, also consummates the marriage. And he loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. And this would be where it's like, it didn't seem like not a few days. Like there's none of that goes on here. He's there may be a suggestion of he's miserable. Or at least he's not as happy as he was prior to this. And so this sets up for chapters 29 and 30 when Jacob's children are born. And so it's out of this scenario that the 12 tribes of Israel are, they come about, they come into existence. And so, so God uses here Jacob's experience of deceit to bring out the, even as it's excused by the cultural custom, he has added to Jacob in this way, through this experience of deceit. Two wives, and to those two wives, there are two servant girls. And this paves the way for the foundation to be laid for Israel. And so you can see the same kind of thing. What Laban intended for evil, God intended for good. Right, what Joseph said. So you see that we've already seen some of these, but in Jacob's life, you really see it, where things happen to Jacob that, and even what Jacob intends for evil, for his own self-advantage, God intends the same act for good. And so there's a that theme is picking up speed. What happens to Jacob? Jacob has already done, so that's coming back on him. You can see this as maybe a discipline from God. I think from our perspective, God's using human deception. He's using cultural custom to bring about the fulfillment of his promises that he specifically made to Abraham and has passed down to Isaac and now Jacob. And so he's using those things in order to bring about the fulfillment of his promises. That teaches a lesson in itself. And I think personally for us in our own lives, when we experience trials, when we experience injustice, we can remember this. We can remember that God intends, even though we experience injustice, God intends good for that in our lives, whether through sanctification, through dependence on him, whatever it is that's going to come out of that. We can look back on, look at what, this was terrible, but look at what happened, look at what came about, the fulfillment of God's promises. That doesn't justify what happened, but it does say, look at what our God can do with injustice. So that's my crack at some so what there. Questions, comments, anything you want to add to? Any of that?
love Esau hated. His mom, Jacob's mom loving him. Isaac loving Esau. Now you have Jacob loving Rachel and since hating Lisa, Leah, who's in 31, the Lord saw that Leah was hated.
Yeah. And the hated is choice. Like, it's it's not this visceral reaction.
Right.
So, Leah's unpreferred, whereas Rachel is preferred.
Seems like a pattern flowing down.
Yeah. Yeah. in this case, it goes the other way around. Like, it's what God does, or it goes in, it comes out in a different way. What God does with this situation between Jacob, this triangle between Jacob, Leah, and Rachel, God doesn't give Jacob what he wants as far as like a big family out of Rachel, with Rachel. He prefers, he shuts Rachel's womb in, and opens Leah's womb, and it says because Leah was unpreferred. And so... So whatever God does in loving Jacob and hating Esau, like he's creator, that's his divine prerogative. We don't have grounds to do the same sort of thing.
No,
I'm just thinking out loud. Like, what's the difference? Yeah.
Like,
how's it right for God to do it?
Yeah, but I mean, Isaac preferred Esau, but bless Jacob. Jacob prefers Rachel.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a pattern there.
What God chooses, not...
Right, yes. And out of this, the two main sons that come from Leah and Rachel, they're the two main sons at the end. Judah, fourth born to Leah, and Joseph, firstborn to Rachel. They're the two big sons at the end. And that's who is like, big picture theologically, where's this seed of the woman who crushes the serpent's head? Where's this ruler coming from? Where's this ultimate victor and champion coming from? Really, there's a question. Is it coming from Joseph, or is it coming through Judah? And that question doesn't... Jacob gives an answer in his blessing. Like the scepter shall not depart from Judah, but then the blessing it gives to Joseph is like, well, that's pretty good too. You really don't find out like Judah's the main guy, Judah's the main tribe for that promise until comes out in Numbers. So that is one of the like all these sons has created an issue. Like so, where's this seed coming from? Who's the one who guarantees the blessing? Good. Yeah, anything else?
Just gets crazier.
It does. Just gets crazier. We're about to see a whole lot of kids happen here in the next chapter. And it's the mandrakes and so I got some work to do to figure all that stuff out so I can so all right, let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this passage, for the instruction that we receive. Let us be instructed that if we live by deception, we will experience deception. At the same time, if we seek to live in accordance with your word, that it doesn't matter what kind of injustice we experience, that you do ultimately intend that for good. So help us to live our lives with confidence. Help us to live our lives before you and in you. Help us to live our lives with integrity. That we would see that it does not pay to live by deception. That's ultimately going. We ultimately see that in Laban, that he definitely gets. He does not experience the blessing as he could have because of how he treats Jacob. So help us to learn these lessons and to live live with integrity. We thank you for how you how you've worked out in history and in this crazy family situation and marriage situation. You have brought much good out of it, and even the fulfillment of your promises. And so we thank you that that you alone are wise and good, help us to be amazed at your wisdom in action. We thank you for Jesus, who's the ultimate one who comes from Jacob, and that we're reconciled to you because of his work. So we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.